Hey man, don't get your panties in a wad. You're not the only person who lost this week.
What are you talking about?
Dude, I'll let you in on a secret. Fight Opinion Radio. Every Friday, it's all the information you could ever want on mixed martial arts. Plus, their site is updated daily with the latest mixed martial arts news from around the country.
Dude, I thought it was a radio show. I can't find it.
Dude, not on the actual radio. What a moron. Okay, www.fightopinion.com. That's the site. You check back often because they update it as fast as the news comes in. Plus, Fridays is when they do their internet radio show.
Sweet. I don't want to miss it.
Zach Arnold doesn't want you to miss it either.
All right, man. I'm feeling lucky. Derek, you're going down. And then Zach, you're next.
You're not that lucky. You didn't learn the last 10 times I beat you. Don't forget, that's www.fightopinion.com.
Everybody, welcome to another edition of Fight Opinion Radio. This is the world's leading podcast on MMA talk, and I'm joined, as always, by this is, by the way, Jeff Thaler, formerly from WhaleDog.com, joined, as always, by the proprietor of Fight Opinion, the man behind ProWrestlingPower.com, Zach Arnold.
100% charisma.
Is that you or me?
That's me.
Yeah, you are 100% correct. Sure as hell's not me. All right, the guy laughing in the background is well known to all of our listeners. It's Luke Nicholson. How are you doing today, Luke?
I'm fine. How are you?
Well, I'm good, but I'm a little excited, Zach and Luke, because we have a new team member to introduce to the fans out there. Zach?
Scott White of MMAOnTop.com.
Scott, welcome.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
You're now part of our wonderful, loving, dysfunctional family here on Fight Opinion Radio. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
Oh, well, we're glad to have you here. I mean, I'd love to sit and talk about Scott, and I'd love to sit to talk to you, Zach and Luke, about all the things going on in your life. But the biggest news in the business side of MMA ever just took place this week. Zach, the Pride Death Pool. The bell rang on the Pride Death Pool. Who won it?
Apparently Zuffa won it, although I don't think anyone's going to be a winner after it long term. But, 2 years ago I talked about Pride having problems. No one believed it. It was one of those things where people scoffed at the notion that Pride would basically collapse. They had a lot of troubles behind the scenes. We know about those troubles. It caught up to them. They lost their TV deal. 6 months later, Ed Fishman says, after losing TV, they lost up to $40 million, and this is where we go.
Right. So the big deal, folks, this week, if you've been under a rock and completely away from the news, Pride is no longer owned by the Japanese people, by a Japanese company, by DSC. It has been sold. The assets of the company have been sold to the owners of the Ultimate Fighting Championship, including Lorenzo Fertitta. It is now an American-owned property. It's controlled by the same people who own the UFC. We have one now mega organization controlling almost all the big-name fighters in MMA. Or, Zach, are they controlling all the big fighters in MMA?
Well, I think they're going to find out during due diligence that a lot of these Pride contracts with the fighters are either non-assignable, or many of these guys are free agents, or they're simply not going to work in America.
Ooh, that would be something. Luke, is this the beginning of the complete Zuffa domination of the sport, where we no longer have a foil like Pride to hold up against them? Or is this the beginning of the crumbling of their attempt to control everything, and we're going to see someone rise from the ashes?
I think it depends on how the due diligence goes that Zach was just talking about. If they've already, I don't think they've already done it, but if they've already done it and, the contracts are assignable, then yeah, this is kind of the beginning of world domination. But I have a feeling that they're going to get into those contracts and realize that, they paid for very little.
No, okay. And what about you, Scott? What do you think? If let's go with the world domination theory for a second. Let's say that they can get the fighter contracts, that they end up controlling almost all the major fighters in the world. Are we going to see an improved sport or a diminished sport?
The sport will be improved because it's taking more like of a league feel. It'll be more like the NHL or Major League Baseball. That's the route I see it going. The fans also win in this because we get to see the fights we've all been waiting for. And everybody's a winner in the short run. But in the long run, there could be problems in the Japanese market.
Yeah, let's talk about this for a second, though. Do the fighters win? We get to see a lot of fights, but we don't have one organization pushing the other to raise salaries. So we've kind of seen, you think the salary's capping out now, Scott?
Yeah, I would say that's the disadvantage right now. The fighters don't have the leverage. We don't have pride anymore to give the big offers. So the fighters, they're not making the choices anymore, so they won't get the big money deals.
Oh, that's true. And Luke, what do you think?
Unless you're Fedor and you can go to Bodog.
Yeah, well, of course, there's always Fedor and Bodog for as long as Calvin Ayres wants to bankroll them. What do you think, though, Luke? You know, you and I talk almost every week. We have our little debate. Is this good for the sport, bad for the sport? Is this a pro wrestling business model? Scott seems to think that it's more like a fight league business model. I disagree. I think this is the classic WWE versus WCW setup. Perfect pro wrestling business model. Do you agree? And if you agree or disagree, regardless, how do you think it leaves the sport, better or worse?
I think it's worse in the sense that there's less places for guys to get experience and fight. I think it's good in the sense that it consolidates more of the talent in one spot. So you do get to see better fights. You get to see more of the fights between the top fighters, and there's not as much interpromotional politicking and bickering between the two sides. But I kind of agree. It reminds me of WWF and WCW, just because before WWF bought WCW, there was former WCW president Eric Bischoff, who now works for WWE, but him and another group tried to purchase WCW, and the sale was announced very publicly, not the way Pride announced their asset sale to UFC, but very publicly, and everyone got excited, and everyone thought this was a new beginning for WCW, and everyone thought things were rosy again, and the sale had only been announced. Nothing had been ironed out. The details weren't done. Nothing like that. And 3 months later, or a little more than 3 months later, the company folded because the company was going to buy them, got into the books, and realized just how bad things were. Their main backer pulled out, said, "We don't want any part of this." The TV network pulled the plug and said, we're not going to promise to air you anymore. And everything collapsed. And there's something eerie that feels similar with Pride being purchased by UFC, that they're going to get into it and they're going to find stuff they don't like. And suddenly this deal is just going to kind of collapse. And everyone's going to be left wondering what happened after this big announcement. And this was pretty extravagant. I mean, they did it outdoors in front of 2,500 people. It was all over the internet. Zach, did it get mainstream news coverage?
Just in the newspapers, so no TV coverage.
But it did make the AP reports, so it did get some pretty big coverage, at least online.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it got some pretty big coverage. I just think that it's always risky to announce these deals when they're not completely done. And normally, I would say Dane is pretty diligent about making sure he doesn't announce something unless it's finished.
Well, like the Wanderlei Silva Chuck Liddell fight?
Well, yeah, something like that. Yeah, but anyway, other than those bonehead decisions where he lets guys on
TV
before,
or like the HBO TV deal.
Yes.
Yeah, he's been. Okay. Well, my theory has been blown to smithers right there. But anyway,
we're just having fun, you know. Dana, I don't think Dana White's the careful speaker. That's all. That's all.
Well, not always. No, but he does. He has repeated on several occasions that he doesn't like to talk about things until they're finished. But he does anyway talk about things before they're done.
Well, let's think about what Dana White said on Saturday night to SureDog.com. He says, Well, you know, the deal's not concrete, you know, and yet he says, 70% of what you read online is crap. And then he's flying off Sunday to Japan.
Yeah, to announce it. So, yeah, I guess, no, you made a good point. I don't know. It's it reminds me of WWF and WCW, but it's tough to get a read on where exactly this is going, because it's not just this deal between Pride and UFC. You've got, you know, the whole, you know, as we talked, well, we talked to him last week, Ed Fishman and his lawsuit, and it just seems like a really complicated, messy situation right now that I think requires people to sit back and wait.
Yeah, definitely messy. I got a theory, Zach, I want to run by you that I haven't seen anywhere. So I don't know if I can take credit for this theory. And maybe I'm totally wrong, and that's why I want to run it by you, Zach. When they announced this, when they announced that the UFC bought WEC, it seemed clear that they were going to let other people run the show, but that Dana White was still going to be the man behind the scenes. When they announced the Pride deal, it was Lorenzo who was going to run the show. And then Dana White came on and said in a very Dana White-esque kind of moment, this is the biggest day of my life, or this is a big moment for me personally, as if this was all about him. But I got the impression that perhaps Dana has less control over Pride than he does, or has had over the WEC and UFC. And is that in my imagination, or is there really, you think, something going on where Lorenzo is going to kind of lessen Dana's role, at least in this regard?
I don't know, but I do know this. I mean, we talked about it with the WEC deal when they bought it out. They talked about keeping it in California. And what was the first thing they did after they said that? They
moved to Vegas.
Las Vegas. You know, so it's a, you know, they say one thing and then they'll do another thing really quickly. And I think that's what's going to happen with Pride. They're going to realize we got ourselves into a money pit here. What do we do?
Yeah, what do you do? So we've talked about it. We've talked about the monopoly, right? The monopoly scenario, Scott. Whereas this looks like the deal goes through. They control both groups of fighters. They have the ability to lock up most of the major talent in MMA.
There's one thing I want to bring up about that, if I can, Jeff.
Yeah.
Which is the bad part about a monopoly is you talk about, well, where are these fighters going to develop and get experience? If you control most of the leagues where the people could fight, how do you give them a shot to get any better?
Oh, I think that's not that big a deal, really. I think there's going to be small organizations and smokers and everything to build
you up.
Well,
people said that about professional wrestling. And you know what happened when Vince McMahon killed all the territories?
What?
It became a lot harder for wrestlers to get better at their craft.
Well, the thing is, UFC's not killing the small regional promotion. They just took down, you know, their main competitor.
It's a big step forward from going from some show drawing 1,000 paid in an armory to working in UFC. It's a big step.
And it was an even bigger step to go from that to working in front of, you know, 40,000 people at Saitama Super Arena.
Right, here's what you're saying. You're trusting UFC with their properties, with their TV shows, with everything. You're entrusting the future of this sport with them to develop their own talent and to be honest about it. This is what you're saying. You're saying that you have confidence in them controlling the way talent is developed in this business. Do you have confidence in that?
Me?
Yeah,
no.
Somewhat. I know. I knew Jeff and R answered me in front of that one, but yeah, I do. Yeah. You don't, Zach?
I don't.
Okay.
Well, I think that any time that you don't have, let's go. There's a problem here. Is that I don't necessarily agree that the small shows won't be there. I think an alternative is that they own a bunch of other WEC style shows, lower level shows, and they build that way. In which case, Zach's scenario, you know, it makes some sense. And in that case, no, I don't trust them to promote or build people. They've never been very good at promoting or building fighters in a progressive way in the past, so I don't see why they would be that way in the future. I mean, they're notorious for kind of rushing guys and burying other people, a la Matt Lindland if the guy sneezes the wrong way. So,
well, you know, that's another thing here, Jeff. When you're talking about a monopoly, you're talking about fighters who have to be very careful now to not cross certain people.
Oh, yeah.
It limits their options. And now you're talking about if they say one bad thing or they do one bad move, they're out of a title picture and out of a lot of money.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not a pretty situation. I don't think it's a better situation for the fighters. It may be better for the fans in the short run because you have the potential to put great champions to fight against each other in a fight whereas when they were different promotions, you couldn't. But I think in the long run, it's not necessarily the best setup for the sport. But Scott, I want to explore with you possibly the other possibility, which is that a bunch of fighters escape through their hands. They escape through Zuffa's hands because of whatever the terms of the contract are that let him out. And they go with other promotions. Some of these guys like Ed Fishman or Bodog or the guys from Pro Elite, they all put up the money to sign him. And then what is left for Zuffa? Do they run a losing promotion in Japan and lose money? And how long would they do that? Do you think it's real possible that this could blow up in their face like that?
I actually don't. I see this going pretty well for them. But if it does blow up, I see them taking a lot of the talent from Pride and just going strictly the UFC, keeping it in America where they've been so successful already. But I disagree with Zach on the whole talent issue, because right now MMA is growing so fast. We're seeing so many small shows. But you still have shows in Canada like TKO that, what do they get, like 9,000 people? And we've got a lot of good guys out of there in the UFC, like George St. Pierre, David Loazzo. We see a lot of talent coming out of Canada now, and the UFC has done a good job of gathering that. And then we have guys like Dennis Kang and Pride. So I don't think we'll ever have a problem with the talent issue.
I'm with Scott on this one. I don't think they've done that bad a job developing fighters. Actually, that might not have been what Scott was saying, but I think when he mentioned George St. Pierre, there's one guy that I thought they've done a pretty damn good job developing. I mean, they didn't rush him along. They gave him a title shot against Matt Hughes a little early, but it didn't really hurt him that much. And I think they've done a pretty decent job. I think they've done a good job with Rashad Evans. I think they did a good job with a lot of guys.
Definitely. I think Diego Sanchez, too. I think they're doing a very good job with him.
I don't think they've screwed up Bill. I mean, they've given up on guys, and that's probably not very good, but in more cases than not, they've done a pretty good job, bringing along younger fighters.
But here's the thing. You're talking about Diego Sanchez and Josh Koscheck and St. Pierre. These are guys that they can control. I mean, there's going to come a point where in this business, this promoter model similar to wrestling is going to fall apart. And you're going to have fighters who suddenly have more power than the promoters. And how is UFC going to react to that? Because they've always been so proactive in trying to keep control, as much control as possible, over their business model. What's going to happen when something develops into a boxing style system where you have fighters starting to promote their own deals?
I don't know. That's a difficult thing to project. I mean, you have to kind of wait and see how it unfolds, don't you?
I mean, there's a reason why Diego Sanchez is certainly being pushed. I mean, he was a product of UFC. I mean, UFC is going to build their own product, and they're going to push their own product. They have no incentive to push anyone outside of their inner circle.
What about Anderson Silva?
No, I mean, look, I mean, Zach is obviously, it's not 100%, but I think you're going to see a preference for the homegrown talent. I mean,
right.
You get a guy like Anderson Silva because you need a legitimate contender for Rich Franklin, and he comes in and explodes. You're going to take advantage of that. But I think you're going to see that they prefer their own guys being pushed through. But listen, I have another question. I have another question, and I'm directing it to you, Luke.
Sure.
You ready?
Shoot.
We know that the stories broke in the Japanese media that Pride was controlled or associated with the Yakuza, the Japanese mafia, which apparently led to them losing their TV deal, these stories. Now, Zuffa is going to be trying to run a promotion in Japan that with the same staff, they said they're keeping the staff that used to be or allegedly associated with the Yakuza and made them lose their TV deal. Are they going to get their TV deal back, Luke, in Japan? Will Zuffa, the people, the Fertittas, be able to keep this element that at least from the stories we hear brought down DSC in the first place, keep them out of the new company, especially in light of the fact it's the same employees running it?
No on both questions, I would say.
Fertitta's have announced that they're going to keep the exact same staff to run the show as they have today, which is the staff that, at least according to these reports in the press, have been associated with the Yakuza and led to them losing their TV deal. In light of that, is there any chance that they could get their TV deal back in Japan and make the company profitable again? And B, can the Fertittas actually keep the Yakuza out, their hands out of the promotion?
I think we were talking about this. Was it yesterday, Zach? About the chances of a foreign-owned company getting primetime television in Japan. And I think the answer to that, Zach, was little to nil.
Yeah, the answer is zero. I mean, there's never been, since the modern history of Japan fight game, since the 50s, there's been no gaijin or foreign owner or boss or president of any fight company that's ever had been successful long-term in the country.
And this is and they didn't put a Japanese face on it from the beginning. They had Lorenzo Fertitta and Dana White standing out there saying, telling Pride fans, however many of them are left in Japan right now, we own your company now. I mean, it's clearly to everyone in Japan, and this got major coverage in Japan, I'm assuming. It's clear to everyone, this isn't a Japanese owned product now. So I think that getting a TV deal back is really, really tough, regardless of who they bring in to sort of be a figurehead in the company. And secondly, I don't know how you keep the Yakuza out. If the Yakuza control as much of, you know, the Japanese fight game as, you know, we think they control in regards to the buildings and the fighters and all that kind of stuff, that's going to be awfully tough to avoid dealing with them. And unless you're going to use, I mean, even if, unless they're going to fly in all their own talent from UFC, they're going to have to deal with them at some point. And what happens when they run a building and they can't get their money out of it right away?
Yeah. Or
I don't know. Like and this goes back to what I was telling Zach yesterday too, was this deal is so risky for them in so many ways that I just, I don't really know what to think of it because it's, I can just see it blowing up in their face to the point where it ends up hurting the sport more than it helps it. I don't just mean hurting it in terms of, you know, less places for a fighter to fight or hurting it in terms of how much the fighters can make or any of those types of things. I mean hurting it in terms of it actually sets it back.
Wow. You know what else, guys? Let's talk about something. Last week we had the Ed Fishman interview, an epic interview in which Ed Fishman opened up a lot about what was going on with back behind the scenes with Pride and also about what was going on with his lawsuit. And one of the things that we figured out as we were speaking to him, Zach, and I actually brought it up to him, was that if he goes out and deposes these people and brings out the fact that there's Yakuza involvement, he said it would hurt his ability to maintain a gaming license in Nevada. And I said, geez, Ed, does this mean this is a poison pill that could stop Zuffa, because they own casinos, the same guys, from them being able to do this deal because they can't afford to be associated with the Yakuza and have their whole gaming license put at risk? Zach, this Ed Fishman lawsuit is now looming even larger because that's still hanging out there and it's very real.
It's not only very real, but if he wants to be aggressive and put everyone under deposition, does that mean he goes after them? Because if he goes after them, I guess the way he could do it would be if he believes that Pride or if he believes that Pride conspired with Zuffa during the time he had the contract with DSE, right?
Right. So there's a principle under the law. There's a something you could sue for called, you guys, it's called interference with contract or interference. Basically interference with contract.
Is there a fancy legal term that you have for that? Like a Latin one?
No, not for me.
Damn it.
I'm sure there is. Interferium with contractius. So the interference with contract says, you know, it's not, if you induce someone to break a contract, you can be sued for that. Now, in California, there's an added requirement that you have to do something illegal in and of itself to get them to break the contract. So you have to have done something else that's independently actionable. But I don't know what the rule is in Nevada. And it's potential now that if he wants to go after Zuffa, he gets him riled up in this interference with contract claim. He gets the Yakuza connection out there and in the public. And then he walks over to the gaming commission. And now Zuffa's gamble in doing this has put their whole Lorenzo Fertitta empire at risk, which I can't see them going down for this, but it's certainly not something that they want in front of them. having the Fertittas lose 22 casinos as a result of this. But I mean, how bad could this get for the Fertitta brothers, in your opinion?
Well, I don't think they'd like to be put under deposition on anything, do you? I don't think Dana White would like to be put under deposition, especially if Ed Fishman's going to claim that these are the guys who influenced the actions in the hotel room meeting in which he was asked to rip up his contract.
You know what?
And after
else?
The way Lorenzo Fertitta responded to Dave Meltzer's question.
Wait. Fill me in on that. Fill me in.
That was okay. Dave Meltzer asked the question about Zach. What was it? I can't remember the question about the UFC Pride deal.
Let me phrase it. Yeah, what happened is they're having this media conference on Tuesday after they bought they announced the sale of the Pride assets. And on the phone, Dave Meltzer is introduced by the conference person. And Dave Meltzer, Dana Lorenzo, he tells him, you know, congratulations on buying the Pride assets and, are you guys going to change the scoring system, whether it's a 10-point must system or you're going to keep the Pride rules? And Lorenzo snaps back at him and goes, you know, oh, I'm surprised you're asking me since you know more about my business. And, you know, and it was a very comment towards Dave Meltzer, who is close with Joe Silva, the matchmaker of UFC. So
you really – I'd love, as an attorney – I'd love to get someone with the temperament of Dana White in a deposition, because guaranteed you videotape the deposition, guaranteed they blow up and they say something they regret. And I guess maybe Lorenzo's not that different.
Well, you know, I guess the thing is, how much credence do you personally, Jeff, give to this Ed Fishman deal? I mean, is it a secondary angle to the sale or is it now primary up front?
I think Ed Fishman's going to be paid a big amount of money to go away. So, Zach, this is what I think. Most likely, his lawsuit is going to put a lot of pressure on the guys from Pride. They probably have a fair amount of money now that they can, I would hope, enough to pay the debts that they owe, including this, if they owe the $10 million that he claims, at least pay that back. And then what happens is they have the cash there. He's going to put a lot of pressure on them. For the Fertitta brothers are not going to want to be deposed. Dana White won't want to be deposed. The DSC guys don't want to be deposed. And that kind of motivation usually leads to a settlement.
But what if he doesn't want a settlement?
Yeah, my experience is that very few people are so principled that when the dollars come on the table that they won't take a reasonable settlement. And
right,
I don't
but
mean
let's
that...
say, let's, you know, Ed Fishman is a rare case because he has a lot of money.
Right.
I mean, to him, this kind of judgment's not going to make or break his deal. I mean, what if he really wants to make a statement here?
Well, there's a lot of potential costs that go along with litigation, and you're talking reputational costs, stress. I mean,
sure.
He gets deposed. There's, he takes away time from his own business. I mean, getting in a heavy litigation, even for the parties involved, can be damn near a full-time job besides the lawyers. If it's true that he feels in principle that he's been wronged and he wants justice and he's a multimillionaire and he doesn't care about anything else, well, then this is going to be really, really ugly. But my experience has been, even people who feel that way and even people who have a lot of money, when it comes down to it, you give them a fair settlement offer and then they tend to make up. Or at least not make up, at least make a deal.
And if that doesn't happen right away, it happens eventually, doesn't it?
Almost never right away. Almost never right away.
I was just going to say, by process of attrition, I mean, the stress and everything has to kind of take, you know, its toll first.
So wrap all this up. I mean, let's talk about what's just the future of Pride. What do you think the future is going to be in the next 6 months, Jeff?
Well, I think in the short term, they're going to try to run their shows. I think they're going to have trouble with the Japanese market. They had trouble with the UFC Japan when they ran it there. Never were able to be successful. They're going to have, the problem with trying to keep the hands out that if there are Yakuza problems, keeping those problems out, they're going to have trouble controlling their staff. They're going to have trouble dealing with a completely different culture that, runs by a different set of mores and social cues. And, I see difficult times. I mean, they're going to run the shows, but I don't see this flourishing blooming like a rose.
Scott, what do you think?
I actually agree with Jeff. I don't see it working out in the short run. Because Pride has already scheduled, like, the lightweight Grand Prix, Pride 34, but that's being run as it currently is. But I just don't see it working out. It's going to take a lot of work, and they have to get used to the Japanese market, which could be very tough. But I'll find it interesting to see who the president ends up being. I don't see it working out right away.
Luke?
I have trouble seeing it working out short-term or long-term. And one of the things sorry to extend this. One of the things we didn't mention was, along with all the potential potholes with Yakuza involvement and all that sort of stuff, there's the issue that who is UFC going to use when they, you know, when they're running Pride as a separate entity? Who are they going to use to draw fans? Like, who's their star that's going to bring the people in? I mean, like, unless they think they can run it based on Pride's previous name and reputation, which has been pretty tarnished, I don't know, it's going to be tough for them to have any kind of success in the first couple of years unless they stumble across Sakuraba's little cousin or something.
Well, if history is any great indicator about this, what will likely happen is UFC will look at the picture and they'll say, well, if we can't find anyone native to draw, we'll bring in our top stars and book them for the shows and hope that we can kill some time here and find some.
What kind of drawing power, though, is Chuck Liddell or Matt Hughes or Rich Franklin going to have in Japan? That was kind of my point of where I was going was, do UFC's top stars have any sort of appeal to the Japanese? I mean, we talked about it before, Zach, where the Japanese like their native heroes. And
well, I think what may happen is we may see them shift Mirko to the Pride shows.
Well, yeah, they could do that, yeah. That's right.
They may come a strategy where they have Chuck Liddell or Mirko or someone where they take the top UFC guys, maybe Tito Ortiz, and they put them over in Pride, hoping that, okay, we'll get some Japanese guys on the undercards, we'll build them up, and hopefully that will carry over in the next show so we don't have to rely on our top talent. But, you know, that's a very short-sighted strategy there, Jeff.
Okay, yeah. So what's your prediction then for the next 6 months?
I think they could lose up to $20 million, and I think if they run any longer, they could lose 40 or 50. I think they could, with UFC and Zuffa lost in the first 5 years in America, I think they could lose that in 6 months in Japan.
Ouch. All right, guys. Well, that is a pretty detailed and interesting look at what's going on in the UFC, and Pride. But that's not all we have this week, Zach.
Oh, no. I mean, we got to talk about UFC Mania. I mean, they got a ton of shows coming up here in America. And, of course, we have to talk about the world-famous grab bag, the highest quarter-hour rated segment in the entire planet of MMA Radio.
Don't forget, we're also going to be talking tonight to Judo Jean LaBelle and another special guest straight from The Apprentice.
And ProElite.com, Kelly Perdue.
Kelly Perdue, winner of the Season 2 of The Apprentice and now involved as an executive in an MMA company. All right, so stay tuned because we have all that coming up on another edition of Fight Opinion Radio.
IVPvideos.com, $2.99 per DVD, over 700 DVDs in stock. Old school, new school, you name it, they have it at IVPvideos.com. DVDs with the custom covers that cannot be purchased anywhere else. 3-day guaranteed shipping, just 3 days. Order it 3 days later, you more than likely will have it and enjoy all the finest that is IVPvideos.com. Yes, IVPvideos.com.
Are you a fight fan? Kakuto.com offers the best memorabilia from K1, Pride, Zero-One, New Japan Pro Wrestling, and so much more. Japanese goods, Japanese prices. That means you pay what a customer pays in Japan. You can't beat it. www.kakuto.com. That's www.kakuto.com.
We're back with more Fight Opinion Radio, and now we're joined by Erin Bucknell. She's been added to the crew. Hi, Erin.
Hello.
Erin, a little bit late for the show this week because she was busy moving. How's the move going?
The move is finally going well. Everything is over here at the new place. I'm quite happy, although I have no internet, so I can only be on briefly tonight.
Oh, well, we're glad you can make it. And, of course, we have Luke and Scott with us, and Zach will be back in a little while. And, guys, we talked about this whole Pride UFC deal because that's the biggest news to hit the business side of the sport ever. But that's not the only thing going on with UFC this coming month because, Luke, they have quite a schedule just on the UFC side of things.
I guess, well, there's three fight shows and three fight shows and I guess two hype shows all this month, and it's all in the first 3 weeks. And actually, how many of the shows are in the first week of the month? There's three of those. Three of the five programs are all in the first week here on the 5th, between the 5th and the 7th.
Well, why don't you walk everybody through so the listeners all know exactly how busy the UFC is going to be.
Well, April 4th is UFC All Access on George St. Pierre, which should be good. There's the debut of The Ultimate Fighter on April 5th, the following night. And prior to that, there is UFC Fight Night, and also on the 5th, that's back-to-back. And then on the 7th, there's UFC 69 with George St. Pierre versus Matt Serra. And then later on the 21st, there's UFC 70 with Mirko Krokop versus Gabriel Gonzaga and Michael Bisping, and they're pretty much their debut show from the UK. So it's a pretty packed month.
It is a busy month. And then you got to add in the Pride show now, right, Scott?
70 is on Spike TV free too.
Right. So that UFC 70 show from the UK was supposed to be on HBO, and they never got their deal done with HBO, even though Dana had announced it several times. And so, Erin, that's now on Spike TV. Have you ever seen an MMA, at least a UFC schedule, quite this busy? This is unheard of.
Insane. I'm not going to complain about it because it's tons of, you know, great MMA to watch, but that's a whole heck of a lot of MMA in 1 month.
We have our ongoing theory here that they're trying to suck up all the oxygen in the sport, figuratively speaking, so there's no room for anyone else to do anything. And Scott, for at least for April, they accomplished that task.
Yes, they definitely did. But the one thing I'm happy about is there's only one pay-per-view, so my wallet's feeling pretty good right now.
Although I have to say,
that's true.
If they're trying to take over completely and not leave you time for any other MMA, they obviously underestimated us MMA geeks, who there's always time for more MMA.
That's true. Hey, yeah. Listen, that's true, because the other thing is about, that's a good point, Scott, with the pay-per-view. They run such an intense pay-per-view schedule. I don't think they could afford to have two. I mean, there's no way people can afford to have two pay-per-views in a month. So, you know, I guess we're benefiting really greatly from the fact that.
Well, that's what wrestling fans did when WWE went to a split brand schedule. And now they're running, they were running three per month. So, you know, I'd say don't count your chickens.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I would say this, Luke. You gotta say this. If they run three per month, there's no way they can do the numbers they're doing off of
all
the shows.
No, they won't. And no, they won't. It'll be get kind of split up amongst the three different shows. But anyway, that's going completely off where we want to go in this segment. So let's just end that right now.
All right. So we have this busy schedule. Let's break down, because there are some pretty interesting fights coming through there. The first thing, let's talk about the fight night on April 5th, and that's going to be headlined by what's become kind of a personal bitter feud, and that is Joe Stevenson's versus Melvin Guillard. Erin, have you been following this controversy with your lack of internet?
Yes, I have a little bit before I lost the internet. Basically, they're fighting each other. Melvin's accused Joe of being on something or other.
Human growth hormone.
That's right, HGH. And he did that on one of the radio shows, and that just seems so amazingly immature. You know, if he's doing something, let the actual commissioning bodies come out with it. You don't need to be accusing somebody of doing something.
And to further that point, do the commission tests, can they even detect HGH yet?
Yeah, I don't think they can.
Yeah, I don't think they can either.
So really, first, the accusation is kind of dumb to begin with. You know, if you have to accuse the fighter of, you know, using HGH or whatever, then it seems like a dumb thing to bring up to try to create a bone of contention between two guys. And then with HGH not even being detectable from the test. They don't have a test for HGH yet anyway, so it's like, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, but let's say,
this is the first I've heard of that, so.
Yeah, but let's say, just as a hypothetical, that one fighter knew or was correct that a second fighter was using HGH and they were going to fight. You don't think he should mention it?
Well, what good was mentioning
but
it
he didn't,
do?
But he didn't mention it. It seems to me, and this is the first I've heard of, but it seems to me like he mentioned it as more of a way to try to create heat for the fight, not as a way to say, hey, this guy's, breaking the rules. And also, it also makes him look like such a brown noser. Like, hey, he's cheating, look at him, sort of deal.
Or possibly even coming up with a preemptive excuse as to why he lost. Well, I would have won, except my opponent is on, human growth hormone, so I couldn't have possibly beaten him.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. If he wanted to bring it up and get the guy, if he was really concerned about what the guy was doing to himself, bring it up to the commission and, I don't know, do it privately first.
Right, let's have an intervention. Melvin Guillard can lead the Joe Stevenson intervention. Joe, we love you and we care about you and we can't let you fight as long as you're using performance enhancing substances. Yeah, we don't know who's doing what. I mean, first of all,
makes it even more ridiculous.
Right. Well, let's make this clear. But Melvin made the accusation. None of us knows whether Joe Stevenson or Melvin's on anything. None of us is accusing anybody of anything. But it is a funny accusation to make. And that's, I guess, the thing worth talking about. All right. Well, listen, there's another fight, though, I want to talk about on that card. Really, the one that catches my eye. And that's Mishima versus Kenny Florian. We got, another of these top Japanese fighters making it to the UFC. And, Scott, what do you think about this fight?
Based on Mishima's last performance in the UFC, I don't see him beating Florian, because Florian showed he's pretty versatile when he fought Shirk for the title, and he brings better stand-up into the fight, so I think that will pose problems. And then on the ground, I'd say they're about equal, so I don't see Mishima getting past Florian in this fight.
You agree, Luke?
Yeah, I think Florian's got the edge. I agree. I think Florian's got the edge standing up, and Mishima's been fighting for quite a while. He's not exactly a spring chicken anymore, so I don't think that. Yeah, I think Florian's got the edge in that fight.
Well, he's not necessarily a spring chicken, but guys, I mean, he has beat some top fighters. I mean, he did beat Marcus Aurelio, top jiu-jitsu fighter. He does have skills on the ground. To me, it's an interesting matchup. I think he's a little bit underrated after that loss to Joe Stevenson, so I'm looking for him to bounce back, actually.
Yeah, maybe it was octagon shock. It could have been, who knows.
Yeah, I don't think he gets caught in that guillotine choke too often, too many more times. Let's put it that way. So we got let's just run down the card. We really don't have time to go through, unfortunately, every fight, but we also have Justin McCulley versus Anthony Hardonk. We have Keita Nakamura versus Drew Fickett. We got Kurt Pellegrino versus To Be Determined, because unfortunately Von der Braga had to drop out of the fight. Forrest Pettis versus Kiniyoshi Hironaka. Seth Petruzzelli versus Wilson Goivea. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Ron Camaro versus Rich Clemente. We're seeing some of these tough fighters come back. And Thiago Alves versus Naoki Kotani. And guys, a little bit funny or a little ironic, a lot of Japanese fighters on this card.
Yeah, that struck me too when I saw the card the first time.
All right, so that card, guys, is going to be followed very closely with the big pay-per-view headlined by George St. Pierre and Scott. The headline fight, George St. Pierre versus Matt Serra. Matt Serra is a guy who couldn't win the title at 155, is absolutely dependent on getting on this fight on the ground. And George St. Pierre is a guy who took Matt Hughes' best shots for a takedown and tossed him aside and destroyed him. I mean, is there any prayer for Matt Serra in this fight?
I do not think Matt Serra has a chance. Sean Sherk could not take St. Pierre down. Matt Hughes couldn't. He is in trouble. Like, I do not see any way he can win this fight.
Aaron, what about you? Is the magic of Brazilian jiu-jitsu going to come through? Is he going to magically find the submission out of nowhere to win this fight?
I'm not going to say never on it, but he really doesn't have much of a chance at it. Maybe he might pull something completely out of nowhere, but I'd definitely be going with GSP on this one.
Yeah, I think everybody who's got any kind of knowledge has got to make GSP a humongous favorite. I don't see him being able to get the fight, Matt Serra, that is, on the ground. And if he gets it there, I don't see George St. Pierre sticking around long enough to get locked up in a submission. He's just too well-versed on the ground, too slippery, too strong, too much of a better athlete. I think we're all going to agree there. So, Luke, I'm going to turn to you instead with a different fight, which is a really intriguing matchup in my view. And that is someone we talked about, Diego Sanchez versus Josh Koscheck. This is a fight. It's a rematch of their fight on The Ultimate Fighter, which Diego Sanchez won by decision. But Koscheck's improved greatly. He's probably the superior wrestler compared to Diego Sanchez. And Diego is really very dependent in his game on being a good wrestler and getting on top. Is Koscheck going to get his revenge?
I'm tempted to say no, and the reason is, and I heard someone else mention this on a different program, Diego has this almost supernatural belief in himself, and he never seems to doubt himself or have any doubt at all that he will lose any fight he goes into. He just has this belief that he will win every fight he takes, and I just right now, he's just been on such an incredible roll that I don't think Koscheck will beat him. But if he does, I wouldn't be shocked either, because Koscheck's just got that thing where he just is able to go in there and take guys down at will and just control them. And I think this fight can go either way. I don't think this is a gimme for Diego Sanchez. I don't think it's going to be easy for Koscheck either. I think this could be either a really exciting fight, depending on how Josh Koscheck decides to approach it, or it could be a really boring fight.
Scott?
Personally, I will never count Koscheck out due to his wrestling skills, but I think his stand-up is vastly overrated, and if he stands with Diego, he could have problems. But based on his wrestling skill, he always has a chance, but I see Diego taking him.
Really?
Decision.
Okay, and how about you, Aaron? You're a big Diego fan, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, I'm a huge Diego fan. I think it's probably going to go pretty much along the way the first one did, but my God, I think this is the only time I will ever root for Koscheck to win. But if he can do it, I will love him forever. I want to see Diego lose.
I thought you just said you were...
She was being sarcastic. She was being sarcastic.
Yes. I should have detected that.
Yes, if you had listened to
The sarcasm was quite heavy in that first statement.
Yeah.
I didn't even notice it. I had my sarcasm meter turned off.
Yeah, Diego Sanchez is right up there with Tank Abbott for her.
Sanchez is worse than Tank Abbott.
So saying it's up there is really kind of an overstatement?
Yeah.
We're not going to go there. We're not going to go there right now. I got to tell you something. I disagree with all you guys. You're all wrong. Ooh. Wrong! Wrong, 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 wrong. Josh Koscheck is a much more, he's improved much more than Diego Sanchez has since the first time we met. Diego Sanchez, although he had a nice knockout against Joe Riggs, is not a stand-up fighter. He's not going to be able to just dominate on the feet. Josh Koscheck may not be a stand-up fighter, but this fight comes down to wrestling and conditioning. I see Josh Koscheck being in the shape to dominate this fight. I see his wrestling ability taking over. And I don't think Diego Sanchez, although he's a great grappler, is not a bottom fighter. He's not a guy who's going to beat you from the bottom, especially with someone like Koscheck, who now knows submissions, is now training in the game a lot more seriously than he had before The Ultimate Fighter. He's too good an athlete, too good a wrestler, too well-prepared. Josh Koscheck puts the first blemish on Diego Sanchez's record, and I'm saying it.
That would be fantastic.
I'll challenge you on the conditioning part. I think they're both pretty well conditioned. I think Diego proved in that fight with Carol Parisian that he can go the distance and push the fight. And I don't think Diego did that bad from it. Has done that bad from his back.
No, I don't think Diego is going to gas. He didn't gas in their first fight, but the first fight Koscheck did gas, and that led to him giving up or losing the third round and losing their first fight. It was not Diego's conditioning. He's always in great shape. It's Koscheck's conditioning that cost the first fight, if I'm remembering it correctly. And so I think his conditioning is going to be better, and that he won't be able to be controlled like he was in the third round, where Diego had a strong finish.
You think Koscheck gets him down, he can control him from the top and mm-hmm. win the fight?
Yeah.
You think it goes the distance? You don't think Koscheck can finish him, do you?
Probably not.
Yeah, okay, I didn't think so either. I mean, I can see both guys winning, but I don't think either guy will finish the other. I think it's a decision either way it goes.
Well, here's the great thing, though. This is a matchup that it's like two fighters up and coming, both very strong fighters, and it's a close matchup. You don't know going in who's going to win. That doesn't always happen in fighting, so I'm actually, regardless, I'm just happy to see a matchup of this quality.
Yeah, it's a good fight.
All right, guys, we have another huge comeback on this card, and that is going to be Heath Herring, the Crazy Horse, coming in and making his comeback to the UFC after a very disappointing debut, taking on Brad Imes, another Ultimate Fighter, a tough show fighter. Luke, is the Crazy Horse going to be back, or are we going to see the same kind of slow and lethargic fighter we saw last time?
I sure as hell hope not, because he needs a strong showing against Brad Imes, or else his stock is going to plummet even further. That was just about the worst debut he could have had when he fought Jake O'Brien, and he has to come out. I think he's got to score a really convincing, knockout or submission win or something. He's got to really pull through in this one, or else UFC might start wondering what the hell they spent the money on.
I'm thinking that his loss to Heath was really his loss to Jake was really his wake-up call, and he's going to hopefully get over the fact that sometimes you can get taken down and you better know what the hell to do when you get down there. So hopefully he's learned his lesson and will come back much stronger.
All right, guys, and the other big card, let's not even, putting aside the launch of the next season of The Ultimate Fighter, but the other big card they got that week is the UFC 70 from the UK, where Mirko Krokop is going to make his return to the octagon to take on Gabriel Gonzalez. Anybody think Gabriel Gonzalez, nice fighter, but anybody think he's got a chance? Speak up now. All right, see, the silence is deafening.
Oh, boy.
Nobody thinks Gonzaga has a chance. If Krokop comes in as his normal self, he'll demolish him.
This is where we need Zach Arnold, because Zach was telling me that he actually thinks Gonzaga has a chance to win this fight.
Well, so. Zach's not here, so...
No, so maybe Zach will have to remember to, leave his schedule free for the UFC segments.
Exactly. All right, so another fight, they're playing for the hometown fan. They're going to have Michael Bisping, Ultimate Fighter champion from two seasons ago, taking on Elvis Sinisic, a fighter with an 8-9-2 record. I guess we all know why Elvis is being brought into the show, guys.
Well, to beat Michael Bisping.
Yeah, that would be to make Bisping look good.
Yeah. See, Zach, you had your sarcasm machine on just now, huh?
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, I think he could be classified on this show as enhancement talent. Anyway.
Yeah, this is not, obviously, Elvis, I mean, he's a very articulate guy, very likable guy. He did beat Jeremy Horn in the UFC, but he should not win this fight, and I don't think he's brought in because he should win the fight. I think that they're trying to build up Michael Bisping, and in front of the UK crowd, it's pretty clear. Another couple other big fighters in there, big fights, and Scott, we have Andre Arlovski versus Fabricio Werdum.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a tough debut for Werdum. He's tough, he's legit on the ground, but I think Arlovski's athleticism is going to pose some problems for him in the fight, and I just don't see him winning in his debut.
Well, what about Arlovski's this, though? Boxing is going to pose some problems for him in the fight.
Yeah, but this is a guy... Definitely. Guys, this guy trains with Krokop, Werdum. He trains with a more athletic, more devastating striker all the time. You don't think he has an answer?
Well, I think
there's a difference between training with a more devastating striker than actually being one.
I agree.
All right.
Yeah,
well,
I would agree with that too. I'm not counting Werdum out. I think if it goes, I think if it goes to the ground, I think he's got the advantage. I don't think that Arlovski's going to be able to reach forward and knock him out with a punch on the ground like he did to Marcio Cruz.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I think that if it gets to the ground, I think Werdum could sub him, but I think if Arlovski keeps it standing up, I don't like Verdun's chances.
I agree with you. I don't count him out. I don't think he's going to win. We also have the return of Lyoto Machida, a guy 9-0, knocked out Rich Franklin in Japan. He's taking on David Heath, also 9-0, big fight. And we're running out of time, but we also have Asterio Silva versus Chick Congo, Matt Grice versus Terry Edom.
We're just gonna leave the prelim fights off.
Asun Kao.
Close enough. We'll just go with that.
All right, and a bunch of other fights on the undercard.
Job.
A number of other fights on the undercard, and so this is truly, like I said, guys, a packed season, and this is a packed show because we're gonna come back. We have a lot more Fight Opinion Radio waiting for you.
Looking to buy a ring for your wrestling, boxing, or MMA promotion?
Unleash a monster.
Are you looking for a cage, steel security rails, vinyl canvas and mat covers, a ring belt, or a ring trailer?
Unleash a monster.
Are you looking for a 6- or 8-sided ring? Do you want your own custom design?
Unleash a Monster.
Monster Wrestling and Boxing Rings is your complete source for all kinds of rings and accessories. If your business is wrestling, boxing, or MMA, if you need a complete ring, a custom design, or even a do-it-yourself kit, then
Unleash a Monster.
Monster rings are used by large promotions, independent promotions, training centers, movie studios, television companies, video game companies, churches, government agencies, nightclubs, bars, youth leagues, martial arts studios, and individuals around the world. Monster Rings sells more rings than all their competitors combined. So,
unleash a monster.
Head to MonsterWrestlingRings.com and explore all the options. Forget the rest. Buy from the best. MonsterWrestlingRings.com.
Unleash a monster.
Today.
Finally, the Ultimate Fighting Championship comes to Texas. Welterweight champion George Rush St. Pierre defends his title against the Ultimate Fighter 4 winner, Matt the Terra Serra. Undefeated welterweight Diego Nightmare Sanchez puts his 17-0 record on the line against the 8-1 powerhouse Josh Koscheck in what will be Sanchez's toughest fight yet. The Ultimate Fighting Championship presents UFC 69 Shootout, Saturday, April 7th from Toyota Center in Houston, Texas. Live on pay-per-view.
Fight Opinion Radio. Zach, you there?
I'm here.
You are hearing. Zach, I gotta tell you, we got a major celebrity on the line.
It's not every day we get a major celebrity of this stature on our show, Jeff.
Well, no, it's not every day, especially since we do a weekly show. But today, you guys listening might know him best as the winner of Season 2 in The Apprentice, Donald Trump's former right-hand man, Kelly Bertu. Welcome, Kelly.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Oh, thank you for coming on the line with us. Now, I hear you're in Vegas right now.
I am in the foundation room at the top of Mandalay Bay.
Wow.
I'm not scouting the competition. Had a couple meetings today and decided to hang out at the foundation room.
Wow. That's not too shabby, huh, Zach?
No, that's not too shabby at all.
Yeah, I'm in my office. Zach's up in his house. You're in the foundation room. It's perfectly congruent. Perfectly congruent. All right. Well, listen, Kelly, we're excited to have you on the show because, well, everybody knows you, I guess, from everything, what you did with Donald Trump and on TV, but you've actually launched into the world of MMA. Is that right?
Absolutely. I am the president of ProElite.com, and a lot of people might have seen the first fight. We own a fight brand as well called Elite Extreme Combat, Elite XC, and we had our first fight on February 10th on Showtime. Televised that, and I am running all of the internet infrastructure. Mm-hmm. ProElite.com is focused on literally helping every fan, every fighter, and every organization in mixed martial arts do whatever it is they do better. For instance, this Saturday night, we're going to stream the Icon Sports fight from Hawaii free to anybody who wants to watch it. All they have to do is register at ProElite.com, and they can watch Trigan Lawler, Mayhem, you name it. Every one of the fights we're going to stream live.
That's neat.
When I look at ProElite.com, I mean, it's a pretty amazing undertaking you guys are doing, especially streaming some of the live fights on the website. What are some of the benefits that you've seen so far from doing this? I mean, how much exposure have you guys gotten from this?
Well, we literally have tens of thousands of registered members, and the feedback we get, and one of the things I'm very focused on is getting lots of feedback from the user base. And I learned that when I was at eTeams, which is an amateur sports portal, and we have with eTeams there are 1 million teams, little league teams, USYSA, AYSU, you name it, bowling leagues using the website called eTeams, and we created an infrastructure that allowed for each of those teams, individuals, and leagues to build their own website and communicate with each other, schedule, standing, roster, you name it, we provide it. I want to do the same thing in the mixed martial arts community for the fans, the fighters, and the organizations. And by organizations, I mean everything from the schools, the fight clubs, gyms, dojos, to managers, promoters, even the media has a place where they can build their own personal website. Think MySpace meets YouTube, focused specifically on mixed martial arts.
Yeah, I was checking out the site. It is very interesting. Jeremy Lappin, we talked to him a few weeks ago, and he kind of gave us the lowdown that you guys were doing this, and it's quite an interesting site. Have you been able to recruit a large number of fighters so far to set up in there and kind of start build the critical mass of fighters for the site?
Well, the great thing about mixed martial arts is it's a growing sport. It's a sport of the future. And, you know, a lot of people who are great athletes, whether you come from wrestling, whether you come from boxing, jiu-jitsu, you name it, a lot of people look at this as, you know, something that they want to do. So we enable each one of those fighters to put up their videos, put up their interviews, because people want to understand how they talk, what they're thinking, what their goals are, what their objectives are, and really identify with the person. Photos, blogs, what they do for training. We enable all of that to occur, and we literally have thousands of fighters on the site. So if you're a fighter, things you want to do are you want to attract sponsors, you want to find, you know, places where you can fight and get exposure. Your manager or promoter wants that to occur for you. Well, instead of sending a DVD via snail mail and hoping that whoever it is that's putting the fight on gets to look at it and can look at it when you actually get them on the phone, I mean, the chances of that are super slim no matter what. If you build your entire website, you know, for instance, you could put up frankshamrock.proelite.com as your URL. Your name is the first part of your URL for the website, and that's kind of where you live. You can build it to, you know, show off whatever it is you want to show off, and you can get that promoter or the person who's putting the fight together and say, hey, look at my site, check this out, look at my fighter, here's one of their best fights, here's how they interact with the camera, here's their background, here's their full record. All of those things we want to enable.
It's actually a very interesting concept. You see a lot of there's a lot of people trying to do the social networking and with the videos and the profiles, but there's nobody I think who's really focused on what's been up to now kind of an insular community like MMA, like mixed martial arts has been. So it's really a very, I guess, fascinating idea to me. And I think, it's definitely worthwhile for people to check it out. I see that, a lot of the fighters actually, as I've kind of clicked over there as we're talking, have their profiles and everything up. So definitely an interesting site. But I guess the question that comes to my mind though is, how have you found working inside the MMA community now? Because it can be not only brutal in the cage, it can be brutal in the business world. For example, we know that, I read that that Zuffa, the owners of the UFC, have entered in litigation with the producers of the fight show. Have you guys been getting any kind of pushback on the site, or is that not your area with the other lawsuit? Or,
well, I mean, I can't speak to the legal ramifications, but it's kind of funny because out of one side of his mouth, Dana says, he doesn't know how to pronounce our name. He calls it a joke, and if it's true what you're saying in terms of a lawsuit, it seems kind of strange that he would pretend to not care about us or call us a joke, at the same time feel threatened enough that he would have to sue us. So it's kind of a strange position to be in. We're all about being inclusive, and I know that's something that he's not very comfortable with. So for instance, ProElite.com really wants to be Switzerland. We want to stream fights. The fans want to see it. I would offer to Dana, hey, we'll stream your undercard fights for you to the internet, and we'll even charge people if he wants us to. But there's three or four fights every pay-per-view fight that never get on. The fighters don't get the exposure. The fans want to see it. We'd be happy to stream it for the internet for them. We're doing that for Icon Sports entire card Saturday night. It's good for the sport. It's good for the fighters. I just kind of wonder why he's not doing it.
Oh, I know why he's not doing it, but that's we have a long running debate about how they manage.
Why is it? Because you can't figure out how to make money doing it.
Yeah, well, that's your theory, Zach?
No.
Yeah, I think that they just want to make sure that there's only one place people go for mixed martial arts, and that's the properties they own, which is what I think. But that's my opinion.
Well, just, if you're for the sport, you're not for a monopoly. monopolies aren't good for anything. It's been proven over and over again through the course of history.
Yeah.
An open economy where it's competitive, you know, since we've come into the sport in the last 8 months, you know, fighter payouts have gone up significantly. There's more opportunities for fighters to get exposure. And when you come right down to it, this sport is about the fighters. They're the athletes. They're the ones that dedicate their time, their energy, and their resources. And they're the ones that should get the respect and the payout at the end.
Yeah, no, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Now, you were a fighter of a different type, weren't you, Kelly? Because you're a graduate of West Point. You went through the Special Forces School. Is that right?
I'm a airborne ranger.
Airborne ranger.
Military intelligence officer. And in fact, my first duty station was the 7th Infantry Division, which the nickname for that unit is the Light Fighters. So I don't know if that would be considered a weight class or what, but in all sincerity and with a great deal of respect, I would never put myself in the same class with these guys and women that get into the cage. It's they train, they're disciplined. I mean, it's the stuff that I really respect. And what we want to highlight on ProElite.com, enable them to really highlight those things that, you know, mainstream America may not be aware of. That's the other reason we stream the live fights is give people a real chance to see it who don't want to pay, you know, $39.99 on their Saturday night. Let's give it to some people for free so they get a taste of it, understand what it is, and really get involved with it, you know, and find a fighter, you know, or a personality that they can identify with and say, hey, you know what? I want to train in that. I want to train in a martial art. I want to learn how to have that discipline and self-confidence that I could, maybe that could be me someday stepping into the cage.
Well, definitely not me stepping in the cage, I'll tell you that. It's dangerous enough talking about it, I'll tell you. All right, well, listen, Kelly, we really appreciate you taking some time to tell us about what you have going on, because it is really very interesting what's going on. It's at ProElite.com. If people want to check out the website, it's like the MySpace and the YouTube combined for MMA. So we have high hopes that this will help promote the sport and do well for everybody. And I guess any final parting words you want to leave the fans with?
Yeah, I want to hear from the fans. If you check out the site and see something you like or don't like or something you want to see, let me know personally. And my URL for my actual fan site on Pro Elite is kellypurdue.proelite.com. And you can private message me. You could smack me. You can tell me, you know, let me know, or there's a big contact us button at the bottom too, and I see all of those. So if you think that we should be doing something differently or help out, make sure to let us know, and don't forget to tune in on Saturday night. I think it's 10:30 on the left coast, so 10:30 PDT for the Icon Sports fight start. I think there's 11 or 12 different fights on the card, ending with Trigg versus Lawler, so it should be pretty exciting.
Yeah, definitely going to be an exciting card, and thanks a lot for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
IVPvideos.com. $2.99 per DVD. Thermal printing, 3-day guaranteed shipping, and over 1,000 wrestling DVDs in stock. Excellent customer service, great quality DVDs. Yes, IVPvideos.com.
It's starting all over again. A night like no other. But this time, it will be live from Tokyo. On April 8th, Pride Fighting Championships will once again make MMA fighting history as the world's elite fighters gather for a night of all-out war. Live for the first time ever from Tokyo, Japan on pay-per-view.
He knocked him out! Unbelievable!
Witness fighting history only as Pride can bring it to you.
Who would have believed it?
Oh my God!
Oh, Jerry, oh, down and out!
The world's best fighters are back. And they're live.
And right and left and right and now.
Put him down.
American fight fans, get ready.
Unbelievable. Fujita's on the plate.
Pride Fighting Championships presents Pride 34 Kamikaze. Premiering live April 8th on pay-per-view.
Ever get the MMA itch? Well, look no further than Kamikaze's MMA Smackdown, your source for all things MMA. We offer pertinent, concise, and exciting commentary on all the latest MMA happenings. Want to know who Tim Sylvia is fighting next? Or what TV deal the IFL snagged? What about whose cat Ben Rothwell wanted to kill? We even have that.
All these things can be found on MMA Smackdown at kamikaze.com. That's KOMIKAZEE.com. If Fight Opinion is your thing, you'll really dig Kamikaze's MMA Smackdown.
Welcome back to Fight Opinion Radio. We've got Jeff and Zach here. And Zach?
Yeah.
We've got one of our most prestigious guests of all time coming up.
Very much a legendary name in the business. I mean, would you not say a legendary name in many circles?
He's a legendary name in a number of businesses. And if you ask him, he's the most handsome man in all of grappling and fighting. We're talking about none other than the man, the myth, the legend, Judo Gene LaBelle. Hello, Judo Gene.
Now with that introduction, I happen to be, my head's so big I can't get it close to the phone. I mean, you're gonna go to hell for lying just like stealing, but that's good too.
Well, now how many times have I seen you punish guys if they didn't admit you were the best looking guy in the room?
Well, you know, if you get a guy down and get him in a hole he can't get out of, you say who's best looking. And it's very funny. People say I'm so ugly I go bear hunting with a switch. But at the gym, when I hook a guy, he squeaks and says, "Oh, Gene LaBelle, you're the best-looking guy in the world." So, you know, it's the place where you're at.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Listen, Gene, I want to take a second and maybe introduce you to some of the listeners, because not everybody who's become a mixed martial arts fan lately knows the sport's history. And they may not be aware of everything you've done. First of all, Gene, you were the U.S. National Judo Champion for two straight years in both your weight class and the open division. Was it 54 and 55, 1954?
You got it.
That's a pretty good memory.
No. You know, some people are good looking. You just happen to be smart.
There you go. At least I won on one count. You went from there, from being the national champion 2 years running in judo, you went on to become a very famous professional pro wrestler. You went on to have the very first televised mixed martial arts match ever in the United States back in the '60s. And then on top of that, what a lot of maybe of the Japanese pro wrestling fans will know you for is you were the referee in a very famous match between Inoki and Muhammad Ali.
Well, first of all, it was done in Japan, so you don't say referee, you say shimbong, which in Japanese means referee.
All right, very good.
And not that you give a darn.
Well, Zach does. Zach is the Japanese expert. You can talk. Zach actually reads Japanese and check out the news, so it means a lot to Zach. Right,
yeah,
Zach?
I can read Japanese too. It says, "Go home, Yankee." I tell you something, I love Japan. I mean, Japan and the people there are absolutely wonderful. And I've been there 12 times, and even as a motorcycle buff, I went to the Honda factories and got to go to Suzuka Fun Center and race some of their bikes with my son around the track. And I don't have enough nice words to say about Japan and their people. And of course, the training facilities for judo, karate, kendo, even the police academy, the Keistro Taikan, treated me really well there, you know. It's great. It's a great place to visit, and it's a great place to live.
Well, let's talk about Japan for a second, Gene, because Japan is where you earned one of your – what's become your trademark, is it not? The pinky?
Well, yeah. It was, you see, now they put all sorts of patches on and your gis, paint them different colors and everything. But when I first competed in Japan, you had to have a clean white judo gi. A judo gi is a uniform that you wear in tournaments, Shi'ai, which is contest, and it has to be clean, beautiful, and all that hero stuff. But at that time, back in 1955, they didn't have fancy washing machines, not even those fancy Honda motorcycles or TVs. And so they did things by hand. So when my gi came back from the laundry, it was pink. The next day, and so I wore it in the tournament, and the next day in my Nietzsche newspapers, it said, Daikon wins, which is a white or a pink radish, as I understand. Well, I had bright red hair, and I said, oh, they're talking about me. They didn't give a darn about me. They're talking about my pink gi. So I've mellowed with age, but over a period of years, I'd wear the pink gi. So if somebody said something bad about me or insulted me, I could beat the tar out of them. And it was perfectly legal because it was on the a mat. So I still wear it, just strictly as a joke.
All right, very good. And Gene, I guess not only of all this stuff that we talked about, but just so people know, you're also a very well-known stuntman. You've been in how many movies now?
Oh, I'd say close to 1,000. Over 500 that I've seen in the last 4 years on television. When I say on television, I get residuals. When you do stunts in a movie or acting, you get paid. And after the second time it shows on television, you get paid again a smaller amount, and it goes on and goes on. I got 16 residuals yesterday. Some of them are large, some of them are small, but it's a great way to make a living. In other jobs, like I've wrestled pro, you wrestle, you get your pay, but there's really no medical or residuals in wrestling. So you got to be in good shape so you don't get hurt.
Yeah, absolutely. And nobody hurts you when you're sitting in your home collecting a residual.
Well, no. Sometimes when you go out to the mailbox and it's rainy, you got to make sure that you don't slip and get hurt on snow or ice.
Yeah.
That's why I moved to California, so there would be no snow or ice when I go to the mailbox to collect my checks.
Yeah, that's absolutely. I want to take you back to, for a minute, Gene, if I may. I want to take you back to a more dangerous time in your life. Are you prepared to go back there?
Wait a second. I'll have to ask my wife. Have you got a lap belt? And a lap belt is for the cars if you're going to roll them over. And I need a helmet and a five-pointer, my wife says. And Chase, back there. Knee pads, back pads. How about the... some Nomex, so if I get on fire, I don't get burned. Mouthpiece.
I don't think we're gonna burn you, Gene. I promise.
It's a first then. I'm gonna be on your program all the time. I hear a lot of good things about both you and.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate that, but I want to take you back because to me this is one of the most remarkable and probably underreported. Events in the history of mixed martial arts. We hear about the beginning of the Ultimate Fighting Championship in the 90s, and we hear so much about the Gracies were down in Brazil challenging any comers, and in the 70s they had some matches on TV. But back in what year was it, Gene, help me out, 1963, you appeared on television in the United States to fight in a mixed martial arts match a professional boxer. I wonder if you could tell people how the heck in 1963 you ended up in an MMA match on television.
Well, it was very interesting. In a magazine called Rogue Magazine, August of 1963, there was an article by a fellow named Jim Beck called... Judo Bums, Karate Bums, and it was very well written. Rogue Magazine was a beautiful color magazine that was equivalent to any of the magazines, Esquire at that time. And a man named Jim Beck, who was a boxer, said any boxer could knock out any martial artist. And I put up $1,000 to anybody that I can't knock out. And so the martial arts industry, and I, although I'm known for judo, I've done boxing, wrestling, kempo, shotokan, taekwondo, and 104 other different martial arts. It's my life, along with racing motorcycles. This fellow named Ed Parker, who brought in kempo karate into the United States, and he was from Hawaii, he said, Gene, he came out to my school, and he says, hey, here's an article on paper, and a guy wants to, he's putting down the martial arts. He offers $1,000 to anybody that he can't knock out. And we had a big meeting with all the martial artists, and we decided that you're the man. And I said to Ed, I said, why me? You know, and he says, because you're the most sadistic bastard I know. And you can believe that, but it's true.
No, and I tell you, Gene, you are the most sadistic bastard I know. No, believe me. I just, in the few times I've seen you on the mat.
Well, let me tell you something. If they want to see the fight, we've got a tape that they sell for like $20 on my website, www.GeneLabelle.com. That's www.GeneLabelle.com.
All right, now listen.
And then they can purchase the thing and see, find out the results.
Yeah, but listen, the funny thing is that you didn't end up fighting the writer, did you?
I was supposed to fight the writer, but it turned out there's a bait and switch, and I end up fighting a guy that was number 5 rated in the world at that time by Ring Magazine, Milo Savage. This guy, I saw him fight down at the Legion in Los Angeles. He goes into the ring the first round, hits the guy's out, and before they finish counting, he is walking out of the ring because he knew he had a knockout. And the guy was a great fighter, not a good fighter. He was a great fighter. I grew up myself at Main Street Gym downtown, and I did a lot of fighting. I was not in his class of fighter or anywhere near it. But if you have an open mind and you learn wrestling, judo, karate, boxing, a lot of boxing, and different martial arts, I don't mean the forms. The forms are very good for exercise, but the competition arts, where there's actual, as you'd say in Japanese, randori, like the wrestlers, they get up, mix it up. And some of the best mixed martial artists in the world are from Japan, the pro wrestlers. A lot of them can, as I say, can really tie their shoes.
Now,
right.
You talk about a Japanese professional wrestler who certainly tied his shoes and got into mixed martial arts, and that was Antonio Inoki. And he fought Muhammad Ali at Nippon Budokan in Tokyo in 1976, and you were the referee for that fight. How did that come about?
Well, it's simple. Since I had a license to referee in Los Angeles boxing, and I grew up, I was a professional wrestler. I boxed all my life. So I did boxing and wrestling and the martial arts. And off of 200 people they interviewed, I was one they thought was the most qualified person to do it. The only thing is the pay was not fair. They gave Muhammad Ali $6 million, which was unbelievable then. They gave Inoki $2 million. And the referee, they only gave $5,000. And I thought I should have got more.
Yeah, total injustice.
And I did. I got a lot of sake along with the $5,000, but I don't drink.
Yeah. What about
it was a great experience.
Can you tell us a little about it? What was it like being in there? I mean, what did you think of that fight with the wrestler? If I recall correctly, Inoki spent a lot of the time on his back or on his butt, and Ali kind of stood up confused. What did you make of that match?
Well, it was a very defensive match. And I believe, I'm opinionated. I think a guy should go for the win. There is more people in any sports that you can name. The more offensive people win more than the defensive people. They say, well, this fighter has a good defense. But it's the offense that usually takes them off their feet. So there was a guy in the corner that was a great wrestler. Carl Gotch was his name. Great pro wrestler. I'm sure Zach knows of him, right?
Yes.
And he was one of my teachers. And he'd say, hey, take him down, tackle him, and take him down. And stretch him. And Inoki fought a different fight since he did karate. He says, well, if I kick the guy, my feet are longer than my arms, I can kick him. And he, after the fight was over, he did have to go to the hospital because of blood clots on his legs. But a wrestler would have taken him down right away and busted a leg or an arm or a neck. Carl Gotch is a very impatient guy and, like myself, opinionated. And you fight a person in a certain way. If I'm a coach, I have my students fight the person the way I think they would win easiest. Inoki is a great wrestler, a great human being, a good friend, and of course Ali is too. Muhammad Ali, when he fought for us at the Olympic Auditorium, my mother was the promoter, and he fought as Cassius Clay. And fought a couple of guys, Archie Moore, who I'm sure you heard of.
Oh, of course.
He fought
course.
Him and knocked him out in the second round. And to me, Muhammad Ali was the greatest heavyweight fighter of all times. And of course, Inoki is a professional wrestler. He's right up there with the best.
Well, let me ask you something, because you, since this time, you continue to train others and teach, and you've been around some of the top talent actually in MMA. I've seen them walk through the gym when you're there. I used to have the privilege of training at your gym, yours and Gokor's gym.
This dojo, there's Japanese people listening. This dojo.
Sorry, at the dojo, and I saw some very big name fighters come in when you were there to get a couple of pointers from you, and of course, probably most famously from the guys who trained there regularly, Carlo Parisian, at the time trained there. What do you make of today's fighters? Are they? I mean, up until Carl, we didn't see a lot of guys in the U.S. who were using their judo effectively in MMA. I know that was something you always wanted to see. What do you make of the new breed of fighters? These cross trained fighters.
You know something, if I can tell you my opinion without wetting my pants, these guys are wonderful. It proves one thing, who is the best? Now, like Carl, he grew up, he was a junior national champion about 9 times, and he learned all this from Gokar Chavin and myself, and we have a school in North Hollywood together. It's a great school. We teach judo there and grappling and the whole bit. If somebody comes in and he learns a little bit of Muay Thai, a little bit of kicking, a little bit of boxing, a little bit of amateur wrestling, and a lot of finishing holds and learning a man's weakness, that's where it's at. And Carl learned all those things, but he's just one of many. I have one of the one of my kids, Manny, an Armenian kid, he's up there training, and you'll see him shortly in some of these tournaments. There's so many good ones. If you say a man's name, then you're insulting everybody else, you know. And there are some great ones. And to me, next, you know, I think it's even more fun participating or watching an MMA, that's mixed martial arts match, than going racing motorcycles.
And that's something. From you, that's something. Hey, listen, hey, Gene, I got another question, but I know we're kind of running short on time, but I have to ask you. This is a personal thing for me. Back when I trained, I was a nothing, nobody beginner. You came out at that time with your Encyclopedia finishing holds. And then while I was, you came out right before I started or sometime before, and after I started training for a while, you came out with a second edition, right? And I believe now you got the third edition. You're out. It's actually out on sale this time.
Oh, yeah. Well, we sell it mainly through our website, www.genelabelle.com. And it's every edition we add some holds. And I say, this is the last, the end of the end. And I was working on a movie in New Mexico over the weekend, and I gave a seminar on Monday because it was a holiday, and I went over a few holds, and I said, geez, this isn't in the book. Well, there's 950 finishing holds in the book, and if you read the book or look at it, it's a great, the best reference. Now, I'm not saying that to blow my own horn. If you're a fanatic at mixed martial arts or finishing holds, I've written books on judo and club defense for the police and everything like that. But if you're into MMA and finishing holds, arm locks and egg locks, back locks, chokes, there might be 100 chokes in there, ways with a gi and without a gi.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, but probably the greatest honor ever bestowed on me, Gene, and is on page, I'm looking at it now, Gene, 533 of your second edition. There's a submission called Upward Top Wrist Lock into a Wrist Twist / Jeff the Man. And when you made that book and you came out that second edition, you opened up that page and you said, Jeff, this is actually, I'm a terrible grappler. And then I was a white belt. I was a nobody. But I got to tell you, it was such an act of kindness. You came up and showed me and you said that was for me. Gene, that's probably one of the greatest things anybody's ever done for me in my whole life.
Named a hold after you. What page was that?
533 of the second edition.
Not on that page. I tell you what, the people that I respect, I named a hold after them for elbow cranks because that's their signature holds, you know?
Yeah.
And there's a picture of me showing fight techniques and refereeing Muhammad Ali in the book. Of course, when we added so many different pages, things are switched around. But, you know, since you're one of my heroes... And, in fact, when you die, I'll be the most talented man around.
Oh, jeez.
That's why when I die, this book will live on forever. It's the most copied book in mixed martial arts, bar none.
Yeah, I will say this about the book, Gene, because I've definitely, obviously, having both the first and second editions, I've looked through them both extensively.
You got to get the third, or I'll have to burn your house down.
Well, I don't want that. I'm it's definitely on my list. But I got to say this: this book is the most comprehensive, like you said, book of submissions there ever was. I've heard some people say, "Well, some of these submissions are a little bit almost like a show hold," and I say, hey, "No, they'll work." Like you always taught me, they'll work, but some of them, you know, when you got 900, some are high percentage and some are low percentage. There's not 950 go-to every time submissions. But if you wanted to ever get, and I will say this as an endorsement, and you go to GeneLabelle.com and pick this up, if you ever wanted to see every type of submission, every variation, or nearly every variation, and learn the game of submissions just so you can see know what you're looking at when you're watching fights, this is the number one resource. I got to say that, Gene.
Okay, now on the third edition, for those who are lucky enough to purchase the third edition, it's on page 238. Jeff the Man, I can't believe it. You got a hold named after you.
By Gene LaBelle.
Variation of the top, upper top wrist lock into a wrist twist.
Yeah.
Which is not only the top wrist lock, but you break the wrist, a few of the fingers, the elbow and the shoulder on the way. Jeff, you know, I'm afraid. I don't mind speaking to you on the radio, but I fear that you might come down to the dojo and put the Jeff the Man hold on me.
Yeah, I don't think you have to fear that. You know, one thing you got to fear, you don't have to fear, but Gene, I was serious. You are sadistic because I know that if somebody comes to you and asks to show a move, if they ever come up and ask you to see a move, they usually felt how the move finished. I remember asking you about a particular, I don't remember which one it is, but it was a move I saw in the book. And I said, how do you do this, Gene? How do you get the guy to turn over? And he said, easy, I'll show you. And you stood up and you gave me a foot, kind of like a cross face, but a stomp cross face right across me. And I rolled over like nobody's business right into the submission hold, you know, and that brings me to something. The style, Gene, I would say that the style, is this fair to say, the style of grappling you favor, as opposed to maybe some of these softer or even, you know, some of these other styles you see there, your style is generally very painful to grapple against. You like
no,
to really...
I tell you, Jeff, excuse me. I have been doing this for years, and I've never been in pain doing it. What do you mean painful? It's never hurt me.
Well, I believe that. I believe
but
that.
I tell you, what we say, Gokhar Chavichin and myself, we call it mostly the dark side of the moon. What the referee doesn't see didn't happen. So, in other words, you don't. A lot of the people you're doing a hold on, they don't get a clear view of it. But if you aren't cheating, you're not trying hard enough. You know, if it works 100 years from now, Jeff and Zach, nobody'll know how the game was played. They'll just know the final score.
No, absolutely.
You know, they'll know who won the war.
Well, listen,
and that's where that. You know, even the few matches that some people say I lost, I was disqualified. I wasn't pinned. I didn't give up. But it's I put a W in my book as a win, because disqualifications in my book is a win.
That's spoken like the true pro wrestler you were or are.
Hey, Jeff.
Yeah.
Hey, Jeff, I got one question I want to ask our esteemed guest.
Sure.
During the time when wrestling happened at the Olympic Auditorium, there were a lot of young Japanese stars who really became legends in the business. You had Seiji Sakaguchi, you had Hiro Matsuda, Riki Choshu. Out of all those Japanese guys, which one would you say was the toughest?
You know something? If I said one person, the other four guys would beat the hell out of me. They're all world-class wrestlers. You name it. And all those Japanese, the Japanese athletes are some of the best in the world. Like when I went there to train these Japanese guys, I couldn't believe it. They didn't know what was to drive their car to the dojo. They didn't know what it was to look at television. They got out there and trained 24/7. So you can't say anything bad about any of the Japanese wrestlers, except they aren't as pretty as me. Besides that, they're great. They're all those wrestlers that came out here and wrestled at the Olympic Auditorium, a fantastic group of athletes.
Well, listen,
and there's a lot of judo guys from Japan that have won Olympic gold medals. Seiji Sakaguchi, and he used to come to my dojo and work out. He won the All Japan, I think, twice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, listen, Gene, we're running out of time, but I got to get your word, if I may, that you'll come back and talk to us, because there's at least half a dozen things we need to go through at some point. I want to talk about one day in the future, what happened in the judo community when you decided to be the first guy to go over and cross into pro wrestling, and how you had to overcome some obstacles there. I'd love to talk about the time you wrestled a bear.
Well, I wrestled a bear and kicked out of the local Nanka Yudanshikai, the local judo group, because at that time, turning pro in any sport was a no-no. So right. I got kicked out. Last month, I was in their how things change. Last month, I was voted into their Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Gave me a big hero button and the gold cup and everything. So.
Yeah. And there's probably about a half a dozen other things that we definitely need to talk about. So, Gene, can I get your promise that when you get a little bit of time in the coming weeks, we can call you again and reminisce a little bit?
Anytime Zach and Jeff want to come by, And Jeff, you got to show me this hold. It's on page 238.
Well,
devastating.
Yeah. Well, I tell you something. I mean this sincerely. If you really want to find out about finishing holds, and actually there's a lot of other information on the site, check out GeneLabelle.com. Truly one of the pioneers and legends when it comes to grappling in MMA and even pro wrestling. So, Gene, thanks a ton for being on the show. And everybody else, we'll be back right after the break.
Live at the Mark of the Quad Cities, Moline, Illinois, Saturday, April 7th, 7:30 p.m. The International Fight League brings you explosive fighting action with championship-caliber athletes in its world premiere season. See which team will reign supreme when Pat Miletich's Silverbacks battle Ken Shamrock's Lions and Maurice Smith's Tiger Sharks face Igor Zinoviev's Red Bears in a full evening of non-stop fighting action. Get your tickets now at the Mark of the Quad Cities box office, Ticketmaster.com, or call Ticketmaster at 563-326-1111.
Okay, move the band here. Yeah, that's very nice. It's very nice. Okay, all right. Hurry up. Okay, put that over there. Oh, no. Oh, jeez. No, careful with that. All right, ready? Set that up. Action.
What can you find at Kakuto.com?
Fresh opinions.
Very informative segments.
Plus, tons of original content.
Plus our store of Japanese fight goods and Kakuto Fan Radio. So check us out at www.kakuto.com.
Looking to buy a ring for your wrestling, boxing, or MMA promotion?
Unleash a monster!
Are you looking for a cage, steel security rails, vinyl canvas and mat covers, a ring belt, or a ring trailer?
Unleash a monster!
Are you looking for a 6- or 8-sided ring? Do you want your own custom design?
Unleash a monster!
Monster Wrestling and Boxing Rings is your complete source for all kinds of rings and accessories. If your business is wrestling, boxing, or MMA, if you need a complete ring, a custom design, or even a do-it-yourself kit, then
unleash a monster.
Monster rings are used by large promotions, independent promotions, training centers, movie studios, television companies, video game companies, churches, government agencies, nightclubs, bars, youth leagues, martial arts studios, and individuals around the world. Monster Rings sells more rings than all their competitors combined. So,
unleash a monster.
Head to MonsterWrestlingRings.com and explore all the options. Forget the rest. Buy from the best. MonsterWrestlingRings.com.
Unleash a monster.
Today.
Folks, it's that time again. Aaron?
The world famous grab bag.
Yes, it's the world famous grab bag, which according to Zach is the single most highest rated quarter hour in all of MMA radio.
All of MMA radio.
Absolutely. And guys, you know what's the most awesomest thing about this grab bag? This particular grab bag? It's not glaringly obvious to you?
Do tell.
It's the four of us are together again. How many weeks since all four of us have done a segment together? It's like the Blues Brothers, and we're getting the band back together.
If it hadn't been for a trip to the movies last week, we would have been together last week, too.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, it was a free movie. I was not about to turn it down.
Hey, all I know...
It was a free Mark Wahlberg movie. He was looking good, damn it.
All right, listen. Let's look at it this way instead. Let's go back to the Blues Brothers analogy. Zach, we're on a mission from God. God wants us to do this world-famous grab bag.
We're giving money to the orphans?
And we're going
to
give the money to the orphans.
Okay.
Save the nuns. Well, can I go first this week, guys?
Sure.
Sure.
My topic is the news that Chuck Liddell was, quote, randomly drug tested after appearing on Good Morning Texas, appearing to be heavily slurring, incoherent, and falling asleep on the set, later blaming it on having pneumonia and a fever and taking sleep medication mere 2 to 3 hours before the show. Interestingly enough, the LA Times reports randomly The Nevada State Athletic Commission decided to test him for drugs, and wow, thank God he came out clean, which is makes me wonder, first of all, if obviously it wasn't random, but I wonder if Zuffa encouraged the test to clear his name.
They don't want speculation running around that one of their champs is a, you know, a druggie. They'd want his name cleared real quick.
Is Keith Kaiser living under a rock?
Why do you say that?
I'm just being sarcastic because the random part of the drug test is if they didn't know what happened on Good Morning Texas.
Yeah. Well, you know what else? You guys, have you checked out this article in the LA Times? Because there's a couple other things in there. One, Chuck Liddell is talking about his bad knee. That it hurts him, but it's stable, and he's not going to have surgery. And I've been telling you guys for like months, Chuck Liddell is limping. Nobody would listen to me. Now it's here. It's in the open. He's got a messed up knee. It's a chronic injury to his knee that's now stabilized. You guys catch that in the article?
Yeah, and my point would be, how come he won't get surgery on it?
Because he's a maniac who wants to fight. That would be the short answer, wouldn't it?
Yes, probably. Doesn't want to take time off to
unless he's blown all the money he made in fighting, I don't see why he wouldn't want surgery.
Yeah, me either. Me either. All right, and then the other interesting thing in this article is they talk about the fact that Rampage, it's really the topic of the article, that Rampage is going to fight Liddell the next show, and they're saying that they wanted to build him up, but he did so well that they're going to put him in immediately. Aaron, I think it's not only that Rampage did well, but it's the fact that who the heck else could Liddell possibly fight that's a legitimate contender at this point?
Yeah, there really isn't any other legitimate contenders right now, so it's pretty much Rampage or random fighter number 127, so it might as well be Rampage.
Or they pay for Liddell to have surgery.
Exactly.
Which they could do, because it's not like they haven't paid for other fighters, you know, medical bills.
No, absolutely.
Well, of course, the bigger issue here is, of course, if Rampage had won the fight under that old deal, he would have been a free agent as a champion, and they can't have that.
Right, so the deal is he's now,
yes.
He signed it, how long is it, a 5-fight deal? Four-fight, you're right, it's a 4-fight deal, my mistake. So he signs a 4-fight deal, he's locked up, he can now get a shot for the title, gonna have a good shot. We're gonna have a good fight for the title. Anybody picking Jackson?
No, I'm not. I Liddell's. I, even with the limp and the injury, I don't know. He just his hands are like sticks of his fingers are like sticks of dynamite. And when he clenches them together, it's like a bomb. And then when he hits you, you just die.
That was awesome. Did you just think of that right then?
Analogy.
I did.
Die.
I did. That was off the top of my head. Right, because
I can't top that, Luke, so I'm going to turn to you for your grab bag.
No, I don't, Liddell's just so...
No, Luke, your grab bag.
Well, mine was... Oh, yeah. On a topic that's not so freakish, the IFL's rating this week was back to a 0.8. This just... This reminds me so much of, you know, a pro wrestling company Jeff doesn't talk about that much. Called TNA, who consistently stays at the same rating with consistently about the same level of buzz, and it's mostly on the internet. And the similarities between the two are just, they're scary in a sense, because you don't want to see, I don't want to see an MMA company follow that path, because anyone who listens to this who has ever watched TNA wrestling knows it is the absolute worst wrestling promotion you can probably watch. It's the promotion that if you watched, you would be most embarrassed to be a wrestling fan if a non-wrestling fan saw you watching it. It's just, you don't, I don't even know what to say. It's they're back to a 0.8. They're on a network that literally could be canceled at any point. I mean, my network TV is not solidified within, the Fox family, are they, Zach? I mean, there has been talk that Fox isn't happy with their ratings and could pull the plug whenever.
Yeah, the plug could be pulled by the end of the year.
They need to do something. They need to, as we talked about last week, you know, slow it down, show less fights, start trying to build towards something more than just, I honestly don't know what they're building to at this point, but they have to do something because the ratings aren't high enough and they're not creating any buzz. And I can't even, the lack of response even on fightopinion.com indicates that even hardcore MMA fans aren't tuning in to watch it. And if they are, it's not moving them to say anything about it, which is something when you consider how passionate most hardcore MMA fans are.
I'd just like to throw in that it would be a decent rating if it was on your random cable channel, but considering the fact that it's on regular broadcast TV, not really so good.
No, it's terrible for network.
All right, Aaron, you're such a smarty pants about TV ratings. Give us your grab bag.
Okay, my grab bag is that after months of maneuvering and promoting it and, you know, teasing us all with it, Tito Ortiz just decides to not show up for his little boxing exhibition with Dana White that he specifically requested. Just decides not to show up, doesn't give anyone a call, just, don't want to do it because it's a bad business decision, even though he's the one that requested it in the first place.
And he wink-winked Dana and was like, what was it he said? What was it they said that he said on Dana's phone message?
I'm letting you off the hook.
Yeah, I'm letting you off the hook. Yeah, right. Wink, wink. I don't want to show up. Damn it.
Yeah. Nudge, nudge. Don't want to do this. It's dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah, great that you thought of this now, Tito.
Good thing Dana should have thought of it, you know, when they signed the contract.
Well, you know, if he was that desperate to have Tito back, he was probably just like, yeah, fine, whatever, let's do it, if that's what it's going to take.
And the other part of the story was that apparently this wasn't supposed to be this... it wasn't really supposed to be this high profile, but my answer to that would be, and you didn't anticipate that, you know, when this finally happened, that your popularity was going to grow and that there's probably the possibility that people were going to find out about this. And it's not like Dana avoided, and it's not like Dana or Tito avoided discussing this. They went out of their way to say, hey, yeah, we've got this clause in our contract that says we're going to have a boxing match if, you know, whatever. And it was a stupid move from the beginning. And, you know, now they both get egg on their face because it never happened. And then now the Athletic Commission's pissed at him, too, which can't be good.
No. Well, do you think it's fair to point out that if Tito Ortiz had a high-quality manager like Monty Cox, that this would never happen?
I think the manager does what Tito asked him to do.
Your thoughts on the Paz as Tito's manager and whether or not he's basically an amateur?
Well, technically, I don't think the Pav actually manages Tito. I think that's more, from what I've read, it's actually Jenna's friends that she works with that actually do the most of the managing stuff for Tito. But whoever did it, should not have let this go through in the first place.
I think Tito manages the Pav.
I think that this is possible. Just, well, you know what? A pro wrestling stunt blows up. Found everybody. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Well, it was a dumb stunt.
It was a dump stump.
Well,
it was a dump stump, but let me just tell you this. Also, you know, they tried to monetize it. They said they were going to give the money to charity, but the UFC was also going to put it on TV, generate all kinds of income and revenue, and not pay Tito anything. And, you know, you're going to try to take something like this, monetize it, and not cut in the fighter. That's a little bit messed up, too. And so, although Tito looks like an idiot for bailing out on this fight at the last minute, let's not forget to put a little bit of blame on the guys that were going to use this and make money off it, generate income, and not give them any.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, right. Certainly. Everyone was a dum-dum head in this situation.
Absolutely. And all right, finally, Zach.
The Iowa State Senate has passed a bill in their House of Chambers in the state government of Iowa to basically deregulate the sport of MMA state. And because it was costing them too much money to regulate events there, and it passed overwhelmingly, and Monty Cox, who is the manager extraordinaire of Team Militage, he was very vehemently opposed to this bill. He thinks that it's going to open up a lot of backyard MMA shows and someone could get killed and it could really hurt the sport. And he's very angry about it.
And he's right to be angry.
Yeah, this is kind of a pretty thoughtless move.
To me, you have these commissions in place to protect the fighters. They charge a fee in order to be certified to run a show. If their fee can't cover their costs, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, you need to figure out some way to balance it that what you're charging is going to pay for everything, because apparently other states can manage to do this, so I'm not really sure why they can't.
And what does it say to states that aren't regulating yet? You know, that Iowa, a state that's regulated, how long has Iowa regulated IMA, by the way? For quite a while, isn't it?
Yeah.
Weren't they one of the first? Yeah, well, what does it say to states that UFC is trying to get to regulate MMA if, you know, a longtime state like this is suddenly saying, sorry, the costs are just too much. We're pulling the plug. Like, just the image issues alone are ridiculous.
Well, it doesn't mean that people can't run MMA in a state. It just means the state government's not going to regulate it.
Well, I know,
yeah,
but I'm just saying. It
basically means that nobody's going to regulate it.
Well, I still don't like the message it sends, so.
No, it's either. A very bad message.
All right, so since we're all in such disagreement about this topic, That was sarcastic. Sarcasm.
Repeat on the sarcasm tonight.
God. Hello, are you people with me? You with me or you gin me?
With ya.
Huh?
Listen, let me tell you something. We're going to draw a line in the sand here, Luke. You either fur me, or you're gin me. Are you fur me, or are you gin me?
What is that from?
Like, don't you worry about that. You either fur it, or you get it.
No, you got to tell me where it's from.
I have no idea where it's from. You either fur it, or you get it. It's the way it is.
That just sounds ridiculous that I just have no comment.
Okay, well, Zach looks like our buddy here is Guinness. He's a Guinness.
Okay, enough with the bad accent. Just stop.
Yeah, the...
All right, fine. Wow.
You know, when you have such a high-quality person like Luke Nicholson on the show, he uses the Queen's English, Jeff.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I'm not quite at the Queen's English level.
I wouldn't say that, but thank you, Zach, for the compliment.
You're welcome.
All right, well, that takes us to our grab bag. I got to tell you something. Aaron and Zach and Luke, it was such a pleasure to finally have us all together on a segment. It's like the whole team back together. I really love having the three of you here on the radio, on the podcast with me. So thanks for all getting together, and let's say great show, huh?
Woohoo!
Yep.
Yeah, I am great as usual.
Yes, I would say you were about as usual. So anyway... Zach and everybody, we want to definitely thank Gene LaBelle, yeah, and also Kelly Perdue, who stopped by and chatted with us, and of course Scott White, who joined us for a couple segments and kind of maybe the new guest member on the team here. So say goodnight, Zach.
Good night, all.
Say goodnight, Luke.
Good night.
Say goodnight, Aaron.
Good night.
All right, you stay classy, internet.
And thanks for stopping by.